And what a pleasure it is to see so many names of people that I recognize and so many that I don't. I look forward to connecting to all of you today and hopefully bringing us together in some Dharma and meditation practice. So we'll start with the guided meditation and then we'll move into the Dharma talk. There will not be a break between the two. And then we'll move into question and answer after the talk. All right, let's get started. Finding your posture that helps you to feel stable, relaxed, and awake. And if you feel comfortable enough to close your eyes, feel free to do that. And starting out with a few deep breaths, deep breaths to help connect to the body. So breathing in through the nose, out through the mouth. These are meant to be stabilizing and connecting breaths, deep breaths in through the nose, out through the mouth. These are the breaths you can hear. And it might be helpful as you breathe in to breathe into your body, connecting to your body as you breathe in. And as you exhale, relaxing. As far as relaxing goes, wanting to relax the body enough so that you can sit here without too much stress. You want to be relaxed and alert. Not so relaxed that you're falling asleep, but not so rigid and tight in your posture that you feel anxious either. Connecting to your typical object of meditation, for many, that's the breath. Dropping the deep breathing if you haven't already. And finding your breath. Noticing where your breath is most dominant. For many, that's at the nostrils, sensing the air, the touch of air as you breathe in and you breathe out. With full awareness. Per the instructions, breathing in long, knowing you're breathing in long. Breathing in short, knowing you're breathing in short. Knowing a cool breath, a warm breath. Using your breath as your anchor, the place to rest your awareness. And if it's helpful, allowing your breath to be in the foreground. And any thoughts that arise or any other sensations or experiences to be in the background, not needing to get rid of them. And as you sit here following your breath, the mind will wander. It's apt to do that. It's not a problem noticing what pulled the mind away and invite the mind back to the breath. So you aim your awareness at your object, the breath, or whatever your usual object of meditation is. You do your best to sustain it there. And then when it wanders, being curious as to the mind's patterns that take it away, take your attention away, and noticing what desire is present. What desire pulled you away from your breath, if any? What craving, desire? See it clearly, and then come back to your object. If there's tension in the desire, then relax. Release and relax any contractions. And if a persistent desire keeps pulling your attention away, and you find yourself lost in whatever this experience is, and you keep trying to come back to your object with no success, feel free to go to this new desire, to this craving or longing that's pulling you away, this distraction. soften, relax, get curious, and explore what's happening in the body, what's happening in the heart, what emotions are present. To the best of your ability, seeing what's happening in the mind without getting lost in any mental chatter. Staying with the body, staying with the heart. Letting this wave crash and move through with your gentle and curious attention. And after it dissipates, its life is over, coming back to your object of meditation. Unless you're in stillness, spaciousness, feel free to rest there as well. Using your anchor with wisdom, when needed, as needed, to stabilize the attention, to bring balance to the mind, to the heart, to the body. And to do so with kindness, with acceptance, with patience. A little loving kindness practice with some visualization. Imagine that you are experiencing yourself and realize. Imagine that you have opened your eyes and realize that you're a beautiful bird with wings shimmering. And your heart is beating very fast. And you feel drawn to jump up and fly. As you're flying over the landscape, you see this big, beautiful tree, shining, shimmering. And you feel like it's calling you forward to sit in the tree, to fly and alight on it. And as you land in this tree, you're filled with loving kindness, realizing that this is a magical tree. You feel your whole being filled with happiness. And you're being healed from the inside out as you hear all the sounds around you, filling your heart with joy. And in this tree, you're totally at peace. What a gift. Taking that in. And I'll think of someone that you would like to invite to have a similar experience. And imagine that this person you've invited turns into a beautiful bird and beckon that person forward to you to come sit in the tree with you on a nearby branch. As you lock eyes, knowing what your friend is feeling, what your loved one is feeling, as they're healed from the inside out, transformed from this amazing, alive tree, as they're filled with loving kindness, with joy, with inner peace. And inviting this tree to duplicate itself over many times and inviting all beings, all humans, to find their bird self and alight in these magical trees. As all humans are filled with loving kindness, healed from the inside out, filled with joy, filled with inner peace. And as we all in our bird lives start to sing and harmonize together a beautiful song that connects us all. Well, hello, welcome back. I was so excited to talk to my son yesterday, who is actually there with Martin. He just finished leading a retreat there in France, he and his wife, Emily, my daughter-in-law. So it was like, oh, it's a family affair. They just finished leading a retreat, and I'll be leading here in Sangha Live. Yeah. So tonight I'm going to be talking about untangling the tangle. And what does that mean? I wanted to start out with something that I wrote. I was looking for a poem that would be applicable and couldn't find one, so I figured I'd just write something. Caught in a circle of tangles, I struggle to get free. The strands only get tighter. Ow, this really hurts. I seek pleasure in conditioned realities, and I briefly forget that I am bound. Then the familiar contractions arise. Oh, I wish these painful knots would go away. Where did these tangles come from? Why am I stuck here? How can I get away from this bondage that stops me from being free? I struggle again and again to loosen these knots by seeking success, pleasure, and knowledge. Oh, but these tangles just get more tangled. Finally, by being willing to feel their tightness and relax amidst the pain, bringing curiosity to these knots, they begin to loosen their grip. As mindful clarity deepens, I see the origin of these tangles. I also see how all other beings are tangled in the same tangles. Compassion grows, wisdom arises, tangles fall away, one strand at a time. So that's kind of a synopsis of my talk today. And I picked untangling the tangle because the Buddha often described human beings as caught in tangles, and that we create these tangles and get caught in them, and that human beings don't know how to get free from these tangles, and his teachings were to help us get free from them, right? So I'll be talking a lot from the place of the Buddha. I'll be talking about the Jata Sutta, which is called the tangle. And then I will also go deeper into some nuanced teachings about craving in particular. And I realize I just want to name that I'm speaking from a place of privilege. I have been lucky enough to be born into a middle class family and to live a life that afforded me this opportunity to be able to have leisure time to meditate every day, to go on a lot of retreats, to take time out as a Buddhist nun to experience that, and to basically have the freedom to live a contemplative lifestyle and to be a full-time Dharma teacher. So I feel a lot of gratitude for that. So let's jump into the Jata Sutta. Brahma Jata came to the Buddha, so this person came to the Buddha and asked, and what he said was, tangled within, tangled without, people are tangled in tangles. I ask you this, Gotama, who can untangle this tangle? And Buddha responded, a wise person grounded in ethics, developing the mind and wisdom, a keen and alert practitioner, they can untangle this tangle. Those in whom greed, hatred, and ignorance have faded away, ones with defilements ended, they have untangled this tangle. And where name and form cease with nothing left over, as well as impingement and perception of form, it's there that the tangle is cut. So that's a lot. So I want to unpack some of what was said here. And this was in the Samyutta Nikaya, if you want to look it up. But basically, this fellow came and asked the Buddha, how do we untangle the mess we've created? And the tangle, the word jata in this case, the Buddha is referring to the network of craving, the network of craving that laces together and arises repeatedly wherein we get entangled. And when we get entangled, it ignites other tangles, and the tangles get strengthened and stronger. they're very painful to be entangled. And I think each and every one of us have probably experienced what it's like when we feel entangled, right? When we feel stuck or dissatisfied. Right. The first noble truth is the truth of suffering. The four noble truths are the main teachings that the Buddha gave, the truth of suffering and stress and dukkha. We see that. We see that moment to moment with awareness. We see how, oh, this is great, but isn't there something else that I can be doing right now? Or maybe I should be doing this, maybe I should be doing that. So when we explore suffering, we will always find some sort of craving. At the root of our suffering is craving, right? Craving for something, some desire, wanting something else, not this, or wanting more of this, not enough. Right. Some people call it dissatisfaction, this chronic dissatisfaction that humans tend to feel. This is our wiring. We're wired. We have a, you know, we're wired to crave, to desire, to seek pleasure, and to avoid pain. This is our wiring. So this sort of tangle of desire, of craving, is what we've woven when we try to control life and believing that it'll help us experience happiness, believing that there's some like perfect life out here that can give us some sort of lasting, blissful, peaceful happiness, right? So when the Buddha woke up, he saw this, these tangles clearly, and he saw the tangle that craving, tangles that craving creates. He also saw through the delusion that creates these tangles. So here's the network of cravings, a tangle inside and tangle outside, inside and outside. Because craving arises in respect to one's own possessions, one's own internal life, as well as for craving for others' possessions. And we've seen that. I'll never forget when I was a child and I realized that one uncle got a swimming pool in my family. And the next thing I know, every uncle started buying swimming pools and getting swimming pools and comparing swimming pools. Whose swimming pool is the best swimming pool? And I was like, whoa, I started to see this craving arises in respect to other people's things. Craving to one's own body and the bodies of others. Wanting our own body to be a particular way, the physical form, and the suffering that it causes when the body's not cooperating and being what we want it to be. Yeah, I've experienced that really deeply when I got a low thyroid condition when I was, I think, 28 years old. My thyroid quit working and I gained a bunch of weight. And I was really not happy with my body. Like, how dare you defy me this way? And so I've had to learn how to love my body the way it is, right? Comparing our body to other bodies, others, other people, and wanting, coveting what other people have. So in the sutta, again, a wise person grounded in ethics, developing the mind of wisdom. A keen and alert practitioner, they can untangle this tangle. So, what does that mean, right? A person grounded in developing ethics is the mind and wisdom is the Noble Eightfold Path, right? The first to right action and right intention is the wisdom division of the Noble Eightfold Path. The right action, right speech, and right livelihood is the ethics division of the Noble Eightfold Path. And developing the mind is mind development, is bhavana, right mindfulness, and right concentration. I learned studying as a nun with my teacher who was from Burma is that the Noble Eightfold Path can be found in every single Buddhist teaching, every sutta. Right. And then in this line, the Buddha is saying a person who practices the Noble Eightfold Path, the ethics, mind, and wisdom divisions. So the next line, those in whom greed, hatred, and ignorance have faded away, ones with defilements ended, they have untangled the tangle. So as we're practicing, and if you study Buddhism, you probably hear of the three poisons, greed, hatred, and ignorance or delusion. And all the defilements, all the mental defilements, hindrances, problems are rooted in one of these three poisons. And these three poisons are unconscious to us if we don't have a practice, if we don't see them clearly. And sadly, as a human race, these three, they create from which tangles come from. We see the amazing amount of we're waking up right now in our world to the level of societal, cultural greed, hatred, and delusion, and how they show up as discrimination, racism, classism, sexism, every ism. We see these tangles in our societies, our cultures, in our world, the hatred and the war. It's very painful. We're not the only ones tangled. Everyone else is tangled too, right? So we have to learn how to work with these tangles skillfully. And if we do that, they'll diminish, they'll get weaker. When we resist the tangles, we fight against the tangles, we hate the tangles, we avoid the tangles, guess what? They get stronger, right? And there's a certain level of we need to look at how when we get detangled, when we find a tangle, we work with it skillfully, which I'll talk about more. And then when we get untangled, we suddenly want everyone else to be untangled, right? We want to inspire other people to get, when we see them tangled in the same tangle we were entangled in, we want to help them get out. But the truth is, people will not be able to get out of their tangle until they're able to see that they're entangled and that they want to get out, right? So, on the next line, and where name and form cease with nothing left over, as well impingement and perception of form, it's there that the tangle is cut. Name and form with nothing left over, perception of form. So in this line, basically what the Buddha is talking about are the five aggregates of clinging, right? Any craving that we have, so craving, we crave for something, we really want it, we desire, we get that thing, we satisfied for a short period of time, right? And then we think we're fine with it. Then later on, we want that same dopamine rush, the same hit. So we crave it again, whatever that is. And then we get the same dopamine rush or a similar dopamine rush. And then we love it. And then we're satisfied for a short period of time. And eventually this process leads to clinging and to attachment. The more we satisfy the craving, the stronger the craving becomes actually, right? It doesn't get weaker, it gets stronger the more we satisfy the craving, the more that tangle gets tangled, right? And then we love whatever we're craving, so we start to cling to it and we get attached to whatever that is, whether it's how we look, is our body. So the Buddha said that the five aggregates of clinging are where we get caught, right? And if you want to study the aggregates, you can study them. But they're basically name and form, nama rupa in Buddhism. Nama refers to the mental components of us and rupa to the physical. So the mental has four aggregates, feeling, perception, consciousness, and thinking mind. And then the rupa is the body, the material form. So I'm not going to go deep into all of those, but we can see how the four mental components and the one physical component is where craving originates and where we get stuck. And we can actually break those down. So those for whom lust and hatred along with ignorance have been expunged, the arahants with taints destroyed, for them the tangle is disentangled. So basically, for those whom practice, right, and use insight practice, deeply see the three poisons and the craving and how they create suffering for us, these tangles. We have to see the tangles clearly and work with them skillfully before we can get untangled. So when we're able to see clearly, that's called vidya. We cease projecting our thoughts in any given moment, and we allow the light of a mindful awareness to shine through. It's kind of like me focusing a light bulb on a projector rather than on what is projected. Yeah. So we need mindfulness. We need mindful awareness to be able to see our tangles clearly, to uncover them, expose them. Mindfulness, I like to pay attention to my body to really connect to keep one, like 10% of my awareness checking in regularly during the day, or keeping 10% on my chest and belly, and sometimes my jaw or teeth, because they contract when I'm entangled in a tangle. I'll feel the physical contraction and pain around something. So when you feel the physical contraction and pain, you can look to see, okay, what am I craving? What am I clinging to right now or attached to right now that's causing me suffering? Yeah. Soften, relax, and look to see where the tangle is. Looking at our tangles, it will require us to be very compassionate with ourselves. And of course, the more we're compassionate with ourselves and our own tangles, the more we'll gain compassion for everyone else, because we see that people are caught in the same tangles to some degree. These, of course, metaphoric tangles, they're thorny, they're painful, they're sticky, right? They're sticky in that we easily get caught back in those tangles if we're not extra aware of what's going on. And when we catch ourselves entangled in pain, emotionally or physically in pain, it's really important that we bring compassion to ourselves instead of self-judgment, right? That's the first, like, oh gosh, here I go again. Here we go again. Here's the same pattern, whatever it is. So here's Ajahn Suchito says, tanha, meaning thirst. And I love that word, thirst, for craving, because we can actually like experience that energetic thirst. It's a reflex, is what Ajahn Suchito says. It's the desire to pull something and feed on it. It's a desire that's never satisfied, because it just shifts from one sense base to another, from one emotional need to the next, from one sense of achievement to another goal. It's the desire that comes from the black hole of need, small and manageable that need is, however small and manageable it is. So we're all born with this uncontrollable instinct, this out of control desires. We're hardwired this way, like I said before. The Buddha, in one of the suttas, used the analogy of craving as trying to see through clear water, and is colored with different colors, blue, orange, and red colors. And so we're not able to look down through the pool of water and see the bottom, to see what's down there. So the Buddha also stated that a craving is like a holding a torch against the wind. The fire will burn you, right? Yeah, they had many analogies about tanha, craving, and clinging. The Buddha said the object of our craving is like a bone without flesh, right? A dog can continue to chew and chew on that bone and never get satisfied because there isn't any flesh on that bone, right? So I'm going to briefly mention the three kinds of craving. that we can look to see that all craving is rooted in one of these three categories. The first is sensual desire, craving for sense pleasures, kama tanha. Right? We can see this, and it's really obvious in food and drug addiction. This thirst for sensual desires, possessions, home, sex, drink, touch. Just this past week, I have had an ongoing on and off addiction with Diet Coke, of all things, Diet Coke. And this past week I quit my Diet Coke addiction again, probably for the sixth time and hopefully the last. But boy, have I really struggled this week with desire for Diet Coke, because I used to have it every day at around 2, 1. So I'm desiring this sweet, bitter taste in my mouth. And then I got really tired because I'm not getting my caffeine fix, right? We all know this desire for sense pleasures. When we feel lonely, sad, empty, frustrated, or afraid, there's this natural inclination to fill these voids. Do you know what I'm talking about? To fill these voids with a sandwich or a movie or some kind of pleasurable thing, right? And it's unconscious. We don't even see it if we're not being mindful. We buy things if we can afford to suppress our pain, our despair, our anger, our depression. We find ways to avoid by consuming through sense pleasures. And then we get attached and we cling to these sense pleasures, right? If anybody dare drink my only Diet Coke that I had when I was, engaging in my Diet Coke addiction, I would have been like, hey, that's mine, right? The second is our thirst for existence, this craving for being, bhava tanha. We don't want to, for most of us, we have a strong sense of self, of who and what we think we are. Most of us don't want to die. We want to survive. We want to be wealthy. We want to be desirable, to be the best musician or a great musician, right? So with this bhava tanha, it's attachment to ideas and perceptions about ourselves, and disappointment and conflict and agitation and upset when we feel that these perceptions are not being respected or seen by others, you know? I think that this is one of the most common causes of suffering in modern culture. You know, people wanting to accumulate, to get and get more, and then it's never enough. That's for the first one. But this obsession with being seen and being somebody in the world, right? I was at one point, in my practice, I realized I was attached to being seen as an honest person. I was honest. And if anybody dare ever question my intentions, I would get angry, and the poison of anger would arise because I was attached to my perception of myself as an honest person. Right? The third is the thirst for non-existence. The third tanha, the thirst for non-existence, for extinction, vibhava tanha. This arises when we're disillusioned with something in our lives. We want to get rid of it. We want to cease it. This is when we're pushing things away. We want a break from life. We see it clearly when we're meditating and we want our bell to ring. We want our session to be over. Or when we're in pain and we want to be released from this world of pain and stress. Obviously, suicide is an intense expression of this. So those are the three forms of tanha. Craving for sense pleasure. The second is our thirst for existence, and our third is our thirst for non-existence. So what do we do with tanha, right? The first thing we have to do is mindfully see it. We have to recognize whenever we're contracting or upset or frustrated or agitated or anxious or even excited, overly excited. We want to look and see, what is it that I'm craving? What's going on here? What's this desire, unwholesome thirst coming from? Right? We want to see it clearly with our practice. And then we can choose to abandon the thirst. We can choose to abandon the craving, the desire. We can be like, okay, I see you. I'm going to let you go. Right? And oftentimes it'll stop just by saying, okay, I'm not going to focus on you. I'm going to let you go. But oftentimes, if it's a very persistent, strongly conditioned pattern, it won't let go just because we choose to. So then we want to bring in our investigation of the desire itself. We want to bring our mindfulness to this desire and explore it. See it in the body, the sensations related to it. We want to soften and relax because we tend to contract around this thirst, right? Because there's suffering there with the thirst. Suffering co-arises with this thirst. We want to soften, relax, bring compassion and curiosity to it. Allow it to be there if we can. Bring space there. Maybe take a few deep breaths and see how it's manifesting in the body. See what other emotions might be present with the thirst or the craving, the desire. An aversion is a desire. It's a desire to get rid of, right? And really be patient with it. It can be helpful sometimes to just say, how strong is this craving from a scale of 1 to 10? It's a 6, you know. Sometimes just naming craving, hello, craving, I see you. Naming it, seeing how intense it is, where it's located. And oftentimes the craving will cease then, but often sometimes it won't. Then we want to get really curious about how it's changing, increasing, staying the same. If we get caught in the craving and we can't be with it without seeking that which we desire, then we want to fill our minds with something wholesome, right? Maybe read a sutta about working with craving or going to a pleasant place in the body or calling a Dharma friend. And talking about, wow, I've been really held by this desire today. So as we work with our cravings and our desires, the cravings lessen, the bonds, the strands, these tangles get untangled naturally just by seeing clearly, bringing patient, calm mindfulness to them, right? And as these tangles untangle, then we experience our true Buddha nature. We fall into a peaceful, spacious place. That is our true nature. Every time I've worked skillfully with a really intense tangle, I consistently fall into more spacious, more awareness, more Buddha light and love and connection. And I start to see through the eyes of loving kindness and compassion, especially knowing that the whole world is entangled. Yeah. Here's The Little Duck. I'll end this with The Little Duck by Donald Babcock. Now we're ready to look at something pretty special. It's a duck riding the ocean at 100 feet beyond the surf. No, it isn't a gull. A gull always has a raucous touch about him. This is some sort of duck, and he cuddles in the swells. He isn't cold, and he is thinking things over. This is a big heaving in the Atlantic Ocean, and he's part of it. He looks a bit like a mandarin or the Lord Buddha meditating under the Bodhi tree. He has poise, however, which is what philosophers must have. He can rest while the Atlantic heaves because he rests in the Atlantic. Probably he doesn't know how large the ocean is, and neither do you. But he realizes, and what does he do, I ask you? He sits down in it. He reposes in the immediate as if it were infinity, which it is. That is the religion, and the duck has it. He's made himself part of the boundless by easing himself into just where it touches him. So these tangles are a key to our freedom. We don't have to hate them, avoid them, want them gone. When we bring loving attention to them, they are like a walkway to the infinite, right? They're our bridge to the infinite. But it's not always easy. That's why we're here to support each other. Yeah. So thank you for your listening. As I try to untangle this tangle. So in a moment, I'll open it up to questions and answers. I believe that George gave us some instructions for that. Thank you very much, Jonathan, for putting the link for the Jata Sutta. So, he asks for dana. Dana is generosity. It's giving. If you can afford to donate to this amazing Sangha Live, this is an online community. So there's so many people that get the benefit from these teachings every week, every day, the meditations. It's just an amazing resource, right? And I keep coming back to teach here because I love Sangha Live. I want to keep it alive. And we need your generosity and donations if you can afford to give. That's much appreciated. And of course, they give me part of that, which is also much appreciated. But the most important thing is that you see your tangles and you start working with your own tangles. Right? That's the most important thing. All right. Namaste. Let's see. So this is Jane. Thanks so much. I work with trauma survivors, and I wonder if you could share thoughts about historical tangles. Oh. Historical tangles. Oh, you know, I love the quote that those who don't learn and understand history are doomed to repeat it. And when you study history in nearly every civilization, you see that these tangles, that when we don't work with our own suffering, and we don't learn how to work with our own craving and suffering, we raise the next generation. We teach the next generation our strategies for how to cope with our tangles by lashing out, by competing, by getting, what's ours to get, by not cooperating or whatever, warring, And the history repeats itself over and over as people raise the next generation to do the same thing they did and maybe a different way. But there's a large group of people who are choosing to wake up, who are choosing to have the courage to look at how we've contributed and cooperated and co-opted these historical tangles, right? We see and we choose not to participate in them, right? We choose to, and it's very painful to see history repeat itself over and over and over again, especially trauma survivors. Right. I work with trauma survivors too, in addiction recovery, and they're so entangled. It's a many multi-layered practice. It takes a lot of patience and a lot of time. But I think the conditioned patterns from our childhoods are and our families are probably the hardest to see, if you haven't noticed that. Yeah, they're the most deeply rooted and the hardest to see. The Buddha taught that we have karma from three existences. We have karma from this lifetime and the past two previous lifetimes that we've carried forward into this lifetime. I don't know if it's true, but the more deeply rooted tangles, his conditioned patterns we bring, probably creates this historical tangles over and over and over again too. So it takes a lot of courage to choose to start, do this practice and to really go for it. Yeah. Great question. And that's a whole, I could talk about that for a day. Yeah. So Angela, how do we help other people with their tangles if they don't practice? The best way we can help people is to detangle our own tangles, right? When people are around us, when we've been doing our practice, we've been doing our work, getting real, being honest about our own tangles, working with our own cravings, desires, fears, insecurities, all of our tanha craving, we're free. We're freer. And people see us get more and more free, right? And if they're paying attention, they want to be free too. So if they're ready to be free and to have the joy and the peace that we experience after years of practice, then they'll maybe be attracted to practicing. But I have an entire family, except for my son, who does not practice. I have a large family. And I remember when I first started meditating and detangling the tangles and becoming a little bit more free. Each time I got really excited, and I'm trying to motivate, the people that I love, family members, partner, ex-partner, etc., to join me in this great practice. It's really hard, but boy, it's freeing. And people just said, "Good for you. I'm not interested." Right. Yeah. So when someone's tangle arises, right, we're in relationship with someone, and their tangle arises, and they try to rope us into their tangle. That happens often in relationships. They're bringing their tangles to the relationship. You're bringing your tangles, and then we just get in a really ugly, painful tangle, co-tangle, right? And then we beat each other up to get out of our tangles, metaphorically. The only thing that we can do is to know what tangle we're bringing to, when I get into some kind of a dispute with somebody, I have to look and see what tangle am I having? What craving, what attachment am I having that's bringing me this pain and suffering? And work with my own tangle. And then take responsibility for it. And if I'm committed to the relationship, I will, speak to my part in it. And then, ask if there's any way that I can help them with their own struggle or suffering if they're open to it. But the last thing that works is, co-tangles are so. I having compassion for someone else's tangles is the most important thing, right? It's great with a someone else who's practicing, who has a deep practice, because after we calm down, we can have a conversation to talk about what conditioned pattern got ignited, and then talk it out. Yeah, this really came up for me, and I had to work with and see my part in it. Yeah, but we can't force anyone else to see their part or see their tangles. We can only have compassion for them and try to alleviate their suffering to the best of our ability. Does that make sense? Yeah. But we can't point out their tangles. We can't tell them what their tangles are. We can't give them suggestions on how to work with their tangle. Yeah. All right. Thank you very much, Angela, for that question. That's another whole day we could talk about that, right? All right, Jerome, the United States is totally entangled. How does such a large group get unentangled? Is there any hope? Oh, that's a good question. First, we have to assume that we've always been entangled, that this is not anything new. It just seems more entangled lately. The human race has always been entangled. And the United States is really struggling right now with a lot of entanglements that are becoming very clear out in the open. Let's take all of your rights and liberties away, women, sorry. And by the way, if you're, bi, gay, trans, your life is threatened now too, your relationships. And we have polarization here, which is just really entangled. It's painful to see. It's painful to be a part of, right? Because if you live in the United States and wherever you live, you're part of that culture, that society. It's kind of hard not to be feel the entanglement of that society, right? And just know that this is a result of our unconscious suffering, unprocessed craving and pain that we don't see. Right? People that don't have the tools and the resources to work with their own pain act out and lash out in really scary ways. And delusion, greed, hatred, and delusion, right? If we're not acting out from a clear seeing, mindfulness, from spaciousness, from our Buddha nature, then we're acting out, the Buddha wisdom of Buddha nature. We're cultivating that. We're connecting to that through our practice. So we're acting, the more we practice, the more we see clearly and work with these hindrances, the more we start acting out from our Buddha nature, our wise, compassionate nature. The less judgmental we become about the masses, and the more compassion we have for the masses. So yeah, we're not the only country struggling. Here I'm in the United States, so I'm speaking we. So I apologize to you from other countries, but every humans are struggling all over the world right now. Yeah, we're all entangled in some way, and we're all working to get free. And what's going on in Ukraine is affecting us all. What's going on. What went on in Syria, what's going, devastating droughts and heat, and people are dying in different parts of the world from the ravages of environmental change and our ever heating world. Yeah, all from greed, hatred, and delusion. Yeah. What can we do? We can wake up ourselves. We can detangle our tangles, and we can increase our compassion and maybe can take compassionate action, whatever we can do to affect positive change in the world. Yeah. Any other questions? It's usually. Okay, someone wants to ask a question on screen.
me, myself, and I. Sorry, because I was waiting to see if someone else would come. But I've, you know, you spoke a bit about it, but it's something that is really alive for me now. So I wonder if you have any tips. My mother is about to turn 95, and she's quite fit and well. But the thing is, we have been very close for many years, and now we have family gathering around. Because she's getting older, she needs more support. So people, family gathers around to give the support. The thing is, we've been apart for many years, and now to bring all that together is a work on its own. For me, the struggle is I can see her entanglements. I can see them quite clearly. I can see the fear arising that I get entangled in her entanglements, and I can see the process of historical, you know, of generational entanglement being with me too. And how can I work with that? Because, you know, I'm not going to change her now, and I'm not going to get her free of those entanglements. But I would like her to be more loose about it. And I would like to, you know, soften the fear that I have that I'm going to be also entangled with that. And I don't know if all this makes sense to you, but it's quite alive now. So if you have any suggestions, that would be welcome. And I do practice a lot. But
yeah. That's where your practice, the rubber meets the road, yeah, when you go to your mother. Right. Exactly. So after this, I'm going to visit my parents. I go every Sunday, and they're my practice on steroids. Right. Because they're very entangled in many ways. Soften, breathe, relax, practice compassion for yourself when you contract around seeing her entanglement, for your wholesome desire for her to be free from entanglement. It's painful to watch people you love suffer, right? Needlessly, but it's not needless because they don't know any different, right? But it's still painful to watch them struggle and suffer. And it's easy for us to say, hey, you know, just relax. But their conditioning is such, they have not done the deconditioning work that we're doing. So having compassion, and then for me, just being that loving, compassionate presence is the only thing that I can bring to them. And then, of course, asking, is there anything that you need while I'm here? And how can I love you is the motto that I bring when I go to see my parents. How can I accept you? How can I be unconditionally accepting of you? Right? It's a really deep practice, and it's quite a gift. So on your way to go see her, you ask yourself whatever questions that you can ask that will help set your intention, your aspiration for when you go there. Because we're always cultivating something through our actions, right? You can either be cultivating patience, compassion, and understanding, or you can be cultivating annoyance and fear and exasperation, you know, which, trust me, I've done that plenty with my parents.
I trust and, you.
And then being, you know, forgiving and compassionate to ourselves when we get entangled, right? Because that's what detangles the tangles, is the mindfulness and the self-compassion and seeing clearly where we get caught. Yeah, and that craving for wanting our parents to be different than what they are is the major entanglement, you know.
Yeah, I believe it's, you know, like I was listening to you, and I can relate to all that, especially the self-compassion, and, you know, trying to balance that, not be overly self-compassionate, because it's a play out. But I think that the most difficult thing for me is the fact that I don't go see her. You know, she's been living with me, so I get to see her 24/7.
So that, man, is
That is the question. So,
oh, I would say take more walks.
Well, I'll be moving now. I'll be moving now soon. So, because she has more support now, so I can take a step out. And yeah. But yeah, I can relate to that. And yeah, it's the way. I can hear you when you say there's nothing more we can do than bring that to.
Yeah, and a lot of hand touching myself really helps. You know, when I'm contracted. And yeah, space away from them would be from your mom. Wow. You know, the Buddha said, if you want to know if someone's enlightened, then live with them. If you want to know if a teacher's enlightened, live with them for 24, hours a day, and watch how they behave when they're challenged, and morning, noon, and night. So you're getting a 24-hour a day challenge.
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Okay, John. Hi, John. The Buddha didn't seem to say much about fear. Many people fear abandonment or not belonging, have a sense of not being good enough. It holds us back, limits our courage and capacity for joy. Sorry, Frank, I missed you. I'll give it to you. How does this fear fit with the Buddha's scheme? What kind of tangles are these? Any thoughts on how to work with them? Fear of abandonment, not belonging, not being good enough. Limits us. So fear is considered this aversion part of craving, the pushing away. It's part of craving. Fear is, the Buddha didn't say much about fear. There were saying a lot more now about the fight, flight, or freeze response, and how fear, you can feel fear pushes you away, you avoid, you shrink. It's very painful, right? And the Buddha talked about the first noble truth of suffering, right? So that's part of the thing. And he said, not getting what you want is suffering. Getting what you don't want is suffering. Fear of dying, getting sick, that's in the first noble truth. So it actually is in there, but it's the word fear is not brought in. And it's the same thing, it's the same tangles, the tangle of, what is it that we want when we fear something? We want something else, right? We want to be free from this fear. That's the tangle itself. So what becomes our practice? Going to the fear itself. We're always going to whatever is predominant. And as I work with fear, I'll get to the craving underneath it. Get to the craving underneath it. And it does take a lot of self-care, especially when we're down on ourselves, right? When we're feeling a lot of pain, it takes reparenting, self-compassion. It's okay. You're okay. Because fear is that we're not going to be good enough. We're not enough. We're not enough, not enough, not enough. That really holds us back, Fear of abandonment. Fear that everyone will find out how that they're really not good enough or not whatever enough. My practice for the first 10 years was working with fear and hating the fear at times and then being like, oh, then it would get stronger. So I think bringing love to fear and compassion and very kind attention is really important. Yeah. I don't think the Buddha had too much fear. I don't know, except for the night of his enlightenment, maybe. Frank. Hi, Frank. What does love want of me now? How can this help untangle? When you say, what does love want from me now? It's a beautiful question. And it's a beautiful inquiry to have. when we're tangled, we can ask that question, what does love want for me now? What would love do now? Right? In a way, once we, when we first start practicing mindfulness, awareness itself is something, you know, we have to force and control, a kind of weird, you know, oh, be, pay attention, pay attention. But the deeper our practice goes and the deeper we connect with awareness and rest in awareness and relax in awareness and open to this spacious awareness, we realize that awareness is love. Love is awareness. It's a, you know, the whole body just resonates in the space around us resonates with this awareness that, that, it's all love, you know? At least it's been my experience through deepening practice. Awareness is love. Love is awareness. Everything is awareness. I know that sounds corny to say, but that, and it, words cannot articulate what I'm trying to say. You can only experience it through practice, right? So what does love want for me now? How can this help untangle? Awareness. Awareness itself, the loving awareness, is what helps untangle. Yeah, just seeing the things clearly and with loving awareness, the spaciousness. It's almost like awareness itself is detangling the tangles, you know? Seeing how we get caught. Yeah, that's a wonderful question, Frank. Thank you so much. And I could say, that's Jerome. Sorry, Jerome, I'm calling you Frank. Yeah, that's a great inquiry question. What does love want for me now? I often will take a hindrance or one of the Noble Eightfold Path factors, and I'll work with that for a month or 2 months or 3 months. I think that would be a great inquiry to have for several months, to stop every so often during the day. What does love want for me now? You know, what does love want for me now? And see what arises in the body, heart, and mind. Yeah. And I think that would be a great contemplation to do that way. Thank you for asking that, Jerome. All right. So detangling our tangles. Enjoying the freedom that comes every time we are able to work skillfully with a tangle. And being kind and compassionate with ourselves and others as much as we can. Thank you, Victoria. Thank you all. Have a great rest of your day. I look forward to seeing you all in Dharma Land.